welcome to another exciting and sparkling edition of Thought Police. I'm Mike Graham and you are...
Kevin O'Sullivan.
And here we are together once again. It's starting to get dark. We're just recording this high above the streets of London. And it has to be said, probably one of the worst fucking weeks in history for the Tory party.
Fucking unbelievable.
It's not going well, is it?
Unbelievable. Really a terrible week for the Tory party, past and present, because... Yeah. We'll talk about Rishi and the gang in a little while. Terrible week for him. But Boris Johnson, past Prime Minister, has been on the stand at the Comedy COVID inquiry. Joining the long queue of fucking politicians and medical alleged experts taking the stand and saying, the trouble with the lockdowns is we didn't lock down early enough and we didn't lock down extensively enough. Here's a better idea, you fucking cunts. We shouldn't have locked down at all.
Yes, exactly right. But I don't want to ask any of those questions. I saw you doing your impression of that fuck-witted barrister. I'm so fed up with these barristers.
Hugo
now.
Keith.
Are there any kind of traditional right-wing conservative barristers left? I don't think there are. Every fucking lawyer worth his fag end and charging £5,000 a minute, they're all fucking lefties.
Yeah, look, there's fucking inquiry just seems to be inquiring into whether or not next time we could lock down earlier, and if we could lock down harder, that would be even better.
Yeah.
What the public want, millions of us, is this: an inquiry into whether or not the lockdowns worked at all, because I say they fucking didn't. And there's another thing I'd like to see at this inquiry is, did the world, including Britain, massively overreact to a virus that didn't kill many people?
Yeah. I mean, of course, you won't get that view from the inquiry people, because all you'll get from them is the people who say that they lost loved ones and they wanted to demonstrate outside. And, I mean, we've had lots of different opinions on it, but, you know, it's very sad that people have lost lives, but an awful lot of people got COVID and didn't die. And those are the facts.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, most people who got COVID didn't die. And I think it's really
that's
wrong.
That's the point.
And I think it's really wrong to try and blame anybody here, because one, nobody really knew what was going on, and two, the fucking shit came from China. How about we blame fucking China?
Well, that's another thing that the fucking inquiry, the COVID inquiry, an inquiry without a spirit of inquiry, they're not allowed to talk about that, whether or not it was man-made in Wuhan, because Michael Gove tried that a couple of weeks ago and got slapped down, literally told by Hugo Keith, we're not going there.
Yeah.
We're not. Well, why not, you stupid sod?
It's not part of our remit.
Yeah, fuck your remit. Your remit's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It absolutely should be. But again, it's all of the same fucking bullshit. It's all of the same Ramonery fucking lefty champagne socialist elite getting on and on Boris Johnson's case because they hate Boris Johnson. Why? Because he made Brexit happen. And that's why they fucking hate him. It's mad.
Yeah, and what the COVID inquiry is, and by the way, the terms of it, the remit of it, was dictated by Baroness Hallett.
Yes.
When she was hired in June 21, I think I'm right in saying. So people say, well, who came up with these rules? It was her. What this inquiry is, it's an establishment protector.
Yeah.
It is there to protect Chris Whitty, Patrick Vallance, Boris Johnson, Matt Hancock, Michael, all of them. Yeah. It's there to protect them from what I would suggest is the enormity of their fucking balls up that they made. It was a fucking cock up.
Yeah.
They did it all wrong,
and
yet the COVID inquiry is merely saying, well, if we'd have only locked down earlier, we'd have been okay. No, we fucking wouldn't have been.
Because also, even as they get to the kind of, it's a bit like Keir Starmer, isn't it? Even when they get to a point where, well, maybe it sounds as though we got it all wrong, instead of exploring that, they stick to the script and they go, well, I've got all these questions to ask you, so I'm just going to ask them.
Yeah.
Instead of having a proper fucking interview process, which we all do every day,
where
you don't know what questions you're going to ask until you start having the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's the way to do it.
And you get
you have to follow up. If Boris Johnson says, you know, we made some mistakes, then you say, well, which mistakes did you make?
Yeah, which was your favourite
mistake? But
they
don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, they just move on to the next question.
Well, here's another thing, Mike. Right, this inquiry, right, by the way, it's already ploughed its way. It's only a few months old.
Mm.
It has already ploughed its way through more than 100 million
because there's thousands of these fucking lawyers.
Yeah. There are more than 100 lawyers.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the other employees, or the
legal clerks,
the collators, the security staff. This is going to cost, this inquiry could easily cost £1 billion.
It's like an industry, isn't it?
Now, if you if you take it on board that this inquiry could last till about 2030, could, about 8 years maybe, the man in charge of the country throughout the crisis is on the stand for 2 days out of 8 years. Yeah. Don't you think he should have been there a bit longer?
One for every 4 years.
Yeah, what the fuck? What the fuck? It's just ridiculous. Mm. So the whole thing is a colossal waste of money. We're getting conned, and I've spoken to a few experts who have said, mark my words, this will not be the last COVID inquiry, because it ain't answering any questions.
No. And of course, next week, we've got Rishi Sunak to look forward to.
Yeah, yeah,
Monday, apparently he's going to come forward. Yeah. That'll be interesting, actually, because he has, for now, tried to make out that he kind of hatched out of an egg somehow and became Prime Minister. So he had nothing to do with COVID, nothing to do with Boris Johnson. Oh, fucking hell, no, you don't like him. Yeah. You know, the same fucking guy who was Chancellor of the Exchequer throughout the whole thing, who came up with Eat Out to Help Out, who came up with the fucking furlough scheme, and who inadvertently, you would hope, allowed fucking billions of pounds worth of fraud to be committed.
Yeah, that was the worst thing.
Right? And didn't even fucking go back and get it. People formed companies, claimed fucking money, and nobody bothered to check.
Billions, billions.
Loads of foreign drivers claimed the loan, 25 grand loan, and fucked off back to Eastern Europe and never to return.
Brilliant.
You
know, I've got a company, which, you know, you probably have as well.
Yeah.
That's the way we tend to operate. That's how we get paid through my company. Now, my financial advisor said, tell you what you want to do. He said this on the QT in the pub. Because he's my brother.
This is at the time.
He said, what you want to do is you want to claim for COVID assistance.
Yeah.
He said, they're giving out money like confetti.
Yeah.
He said, I reckon in 5 days you could have 10,000 quid in your account.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I don't feel good about that. But thousands of people were just inventing companies.
Well, they just invented companies, and not one of those companies was checked, because many of them were literally set up the day before they claimed the money.
Exactly.
And then they got the money, shut down the company, and nobody knows where the money goes.
It's fucking,
and you think, are they that fucking stupid?
And is the inquiry going to be looking into this? Probably not.
No.
Because they don't like to go anywhere that makes it uncomfortable for the politicians and the medical experts who made such a fucking cock-up of this shambles of a COVID crisis.
Yes.
You know, they seem to be patting themselves, we made a few mistakes, but pretty much we were great. Yeah. No, you were shit.
Got the big decisions right.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, fucking hell.
But also, it doesn't matter a fag end, does it? And these people who were outside demonstrating, saying, you know, somebody actually, I heard one of them on the radio yesterday talking, saying, and the interviewer was like, well, what do you want exactly? We want an apology. He was like, well, he's made an apology.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but that wasn't a proper apology. Didn't like that apology.
Yeah.
Well, what else do you want? Well, we want to make sure it never happens again. Right. Well, these people are never going to be in charge again, so it's a waste of fucking time.
Yeah.
You know,
but this has become the ritual, hasn't it? Gove did it, Johnson did it, Matt Hancock did it. All the politicians go, I'd like to apologise for the mistakes we made and for the people who don't. I mean, it's a meaningless apology because they're all doing it. They all think that's part of the shtick.
Right. That's how it begins, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to go in there, and the first thing you're going to do is say how sorry you are.
They're
not going to admit that it was your fault, though, because that would be wrong. Because the last thing you want is to be sued by somebody who says, well, he sat in an inquiry and said it was all his fault.
I just want to say sorry. I want to apologise because we didn't lock down early enough or extensively enough. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I know.
Shouldn't have locked down at all. There's no evidence that lockdowns were effective. By the way, Eat Out to Help Out, I thought was a fucking good idea.
I did as well.
You got the hospitality industry up on its feet again. And they go, oh, yeah, well, Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor then, he killed millions of people because of this, or thousands.
Here's the point.
Think about it. Our death rate is considerably lower in quite a few countries that didn't have Help Out to Eat Out. So there's no evidence that Help Out to Eat Out did any harm at all. In fact, it was very good for the hospitality
industry. It's like Brexit. You know, if you don't like it, you say it's all shit and it's all rubbish and it's making Britain the laughingstock of the world. If you believe in it, you understand that it maybe hasn't worked quite as well as it should have done, but actually we're better off without being part of the fucking European Union. You know, same with COVID. If you believe that the reason why loads of people died is because it's the government's fault, then you're never going to change your view, are you?
Yeah.
Whereas if you believe that, unfortunately, some people died largely because they were, ridden with comorbidities and they were older or they were in care homes or whatever it was, You know, I'm not sure that they were going to survive a fucking pandemic the like of what COVID was. Anyway, no matter what the fucking government did.
That's a whitewash. I've got another whitewash for you. They've just come back.
Are we allowed to say whitewash?
Yeah.
I mean, it might be somehow racist.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Yeah. I'd like to apologise.
For no particular colour.
I'd like to apologise for that. No. So the other whitewash, it just emerged today, just as we were recording this podcast, that ITV, they hired external barristers.
Of course they did.
So these barristers, let's get this right, they're getting paid by ITV to investigate.
Very well.
To investigate this morning and whether or not it was Schofield.
Yeah, what did they decide?
Well, funnily enough, they've completely exonerated ITV.
Of course they have.
Turns out ITV, who have paid these barristers, didn't do anything wrong.
Right. And Carolyn McCall's in the clear, is she?
Yeah, they're all in the clear.
Yeah, see, I was hoping for that because it seemed really unfair that Philip Schofield could be banging, having a relationship with a young runner, and they expected everybody to know about it, even though he kept being seen publicly with him, and he took him on a boat once to the fucking award ceremony where he went on stage with him, but amazingly, nobody knew who the kid was.
Yeah, so people keep saying, well, you know, it's not ITV. It's not their fault because Philip Schofield and his young lover chose to lie about this affair.
Yeah, shocking.
So, to be fair, Schofield has admitted he lied when asked about this.
Yeah.
But, you know, so ITV basically go to Schofield and said, are you having an inappropriate relationship with this younger member of staff? He goes, no, I'm not. So ITV went, okay, that's good enough for us. Thank you very much. We're out of here.
Would you mind getting off him while you answer the question?
That's like me murdering someone, you know, stabbing someone to death and the police turning up and saying, did you stab that person? Right. No, I didn't. Well, that's the end of our investigation.
Yeah. And who's that in the cupboard?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is fucking bullshit.
It is. I mean, if people were really that dim, surely they would never be running companies, you know, because they would walk around literally seeing nothing, hearing nothing, and wondering about nothing at all. Yeah.
Well, this whitewash is so phenomenal.
Is that the end of it then?
No, well, they think it is, but they think they've closed the book on it. They've barely opened the fucking cover. Right. All this has done is set up a load more questions, and by the way, this morning's fucked anyway. Yeah. It's just completely toxic now, full of non-entities that nobody likes. Nobody's watching it anymore. Right. So fuck off with your fucking program. You want to whitewash it, do it, but
we're not buying it.
Nobody's listening to you. A bit like they're not listening to Rishi Sunak about the migrant crisis.
Oh my God. He's not going to leave it alone, is he? I mean, he's going to literally be dragged under one of these boats one day and he'll still be babbling on about, stop the boat. Stop the boat. Just as he's literally fucking drowns in the wake of one of these dinghies. Yeah. I mean, just fucking give it up. It's not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a thing last night and I didn't hear anything about it today, so I don't know whether it was not bogus or not.
Yeah.
But supposedly the Rwandan government have now come out and said, look, if any of this breaches any international fucking laws, we're out. Yeah. We're not doing it.
Yeah, so like they care that
so
much.
Even they're going, actually, well, they've already got the money. They've already given 140 million. They've already bought a fleet of fucking Mercedes cars and fucking booked a few holidays in the Caribbean. So don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point is that the boats are going to keep coming until they are physically stopped.
Yeah.
And unless we have the balls to do that, then it's going to go on forever.
Well, my favourite aspect of this, this absolute shit show that Sunak has got himself into, you know, is that he could cure the problem by doing what Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick suggested, which is just leave the ECHR, the European Convention on Human Rights. But he won't because it's a globalist club and he loves globalist clubs.
Yeah.
So what he's doing...
And he's worried that his backbenchers will moan about it.
Yeah, but he's passing laws left, right and centre to circumnavigate the ECHR. And my favourite aspect of I love this, is the Supreme Court, in their infinite lack of wisdom, ruled that Rwanda isn't necessarily a safe place for migrants and they might get referred, which means repatriated to their
own.
That's
a new word, isn't it?
They have referment.
Referred, so R-E-F-U-R-L.
Yeah, something like that. Referment. Anyway, so the Supreme Court said, we're not convinced this is a safe place for migrants. Rishi, I'll show you. It's going to get MPs to vote that it's a safe place. What else are you going to do? Going to vote that the moon's made of fucking cheese? Holiday in Somalia because MPs said it's all right. It's fucking ridiculous.
I know. I mean, I personally think it probably is no more fucking dangerous than it is in fucking central London.
I think
it's probably safer than London. Because they're all here.
Supreme Court are wrong, but that isn't the point. It is what it is.
I mean, most of the fucking people who committed war crimes in Rwanda back in the days when the Tutsis and the Hutus were cutting each other's arms off with machetes, they're all working down at Lambeth Library. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, they're all here. There's nobody fucking there to hurt you.
Yeah, no, I think the Supreme Court's entirely wrong. I think Rwanda's a perfectly safe place to send migrants, but that isn't what the court ruled. Rishi Sunak says, right, I'll prove to you that Rwanda's safe. I'll get MPs to vote that it's safe.
Yes.
You can't vote away reality. No. It's ridiculous.
It really is ridiculous. But, I mean, he clearly is going to go to the fucking ballots convinced that he's done something. I mean, even today, he was ranting on about how he's managed to fucking stop some of the boats. They're down by a third, claims Rishi.
Yeah.
But nobody's fucking noticing that because there's so many people here already that it doesn't give the impression that there's fear of them coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just like the place is full of fucking migrants.
Yeah, and then, so when he gave that press conference about his new plan B about Rwanda and all the legislation, he actually, at number 10 down the street, he actually stood in front of a lectern emblazoned with his favourite slogan, "Stop the boats." Can't help noticing, Rashid, that you haven't stopped the fucking boats.
Right, but he's obviously convinced himself that he has, so he's living that fucking cloud cuckoo land for the rest of his time, which won't be much longer, I don't think.
Do you know what he reminds me of? You know, you've seen that, the Holy Grail, Monty Python, when John Cleese the Knight, you know.
The Black Knight.
I'm fighting you, he chops his arm off. Right, I'll use my other arm. Chops his arm off. Legs. Come on, I'll bite your legs off. You know, he's just getting more and more desperate by the day.
If it did work, it's literally a tiny smidgen of the numbers that are coming in on a fucking weekly basis. And in fact, it wouldn't even carry, I think it's all about 500, even if it goes up to a few thousand. It's literally less than a week's worth. It's less than a week's
worth.
It's
hundreds at best. They think probably 200.
Right.
So when they say it's a deterrent, you know, if you come across in a boat, you might end up in Rwanda. Most migrants will say, well, there's 175,000 asylum seekers in Britain, you know, 60,000 coming across the channel, a million legal migrants coming in, and maybe 200 people might get sent to Rwanda. Mm. Do you know what? I'll take my chances. It's not much of a fucking deterrent.
No, of course it isn't. And if you get in, you're very unlikely to get kicked out because nobody knows who you are, nobody knows where you are. Mm. You can fucking wander about at will, get a job, don't get a job, you know, join a fucking gang, start selling cocaine, get a fucking bike and start delivering food,
do whatever
you like. Nobody's going to fucking stop you.
Do you know what's really funny as well? Is, of course, Suella Braverman, the former Home Secretary, became a massive thorn in Rishi's side. So what he did at an early stage of her tenure as Home Secretary, said, I need a safe pair of hands, someone loyal to keep an eye on her. That was Robert Jenrick, the Immigration Minister, who basically said, yeah, I'll do that, Rishi. He goes over, starts chatting to Suella, and he concludes, you know what, she's right. Sunak's talking bollocks. So he dramatically resigns and becomes even more of a thorn in Rishi's side.
But so far, as we record this, the day after, he hasn't actually caused anybody else to resign, but that could change quite quickly, couldn't it? We should see.
Well, I'll tell you what I was hoping was, it when we heard that he was going to have a press conference the morning after Jenrick resigned because he didn't believe that Plan B would work, I thought it would be funny if Rishi stood up and said, well, I don't think it'll work either, so I'm here to resign.
Yes, I mean, he might as well fucking resign because he's got fucking no chance in hell of actually winning.
Why don't they just have another leadership battle? Because
they might as well.
The Tories have just turned into a fucking joke.
Well, it is.
We might as well have a laugh.
It's a fucking ludicrous notion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Prince Harry. He's back in the news this week. A couple of things. One, he now wants a fucking judicial review of this decision that's already been taken. Yeah. So he's wasting even more of his own money and ours by having yet another court case, because we have to defend it. The government has to defend it, which means we have to pay for the lawyers. Again, thousands of pounds a day. Because he says that the UK is my home, but I was forced to step back because he was frightened. He didn't think it was safe for him and his family, and that's why he can't live here. He basically says that he had no option but to leave the country in 2020. It was with great sadness for both of us that my wife and I felt forced to step back and leave the country. Where he then goes to one of the most dangerous countries in the world, where he can be shot dead any given fucking hour of any given day.
The most privately owned guns on the face of the planet.
He thinks
that's safer.
Yeah, he says, I cannot put my wife in danger like that. And given my experiences in life, I'm reluctant to unnecessarily put myself in harm's way.
So he expects...
That's why he wrote about killing the Taliban, didn't he?
Fuck it, man.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. He expects the British taxpayer to pay for armed police guards when he comes to this country. And he said, if I don't get this, then I won't be able to come to the country again. Well, okay, don't then.
Yeah, fine. That's okay with us.
Say where you fucking are. Yeah. Nobody cares.
That's okay with us.
But it's just ridiculous. It's costing us a fortune. And I don't believe it's really about security.
No.
It's about status.
Yeah.
His basic case is, well, if my dad gets it and William gets it, what are the royal protection? Why don't I?
Yes.
Status.
He doesn't like the fact that he says he's treated differently and unfairly. But, you know, he's a fucking sport rotten little twat, isn't he? At the end of the
day. He's a prick on a fucking Olympic scale. He really is.
Now, here's a story I wanted to ask you about, because I thought you might have a couple of stories about Anne Robinson. See that story today in The Sun about Anne Robinson
Going out with
Parker Bowles. 79.
Wow. Is that how old Anne is?
Yeah, she's 79. Oh, yeah, she was quite a fun woman to be around. I remember when she worked for she did a column in the Express for a while when I was working there. And she was great fun. And she was married to Charlie Wilson, the Times editor. And then latterly... the other guy who ended up getting cancer.
Oh, John Penfold.
John Penfold, yeah.
Who was the features editor of The Mirror. Yeah, yes. She was a great Fleet Street character.
Didn't he become a bit of a TV figure as well?
He managed her.
Yes.
He managed her very successfully.
Because I knew some people, the Pagavis, Dermot Pagavi and his wife, who were good friends with them, so they used to come to New York quite a lot. And apparently she was one of the first people in Britain to have a massive fucking swimming pool installed in her house.
That would be
out. You know. And she made a lot. She was one of the first sort of multi-millionaire television presenters.
Yeah, because she's a very formidable woman.
Yes.
I've known her over the years. I was actually, I worked at the Mirror Group while she was still one of their star players.
Yeah, right.
I had to go and get some, you know, in those days you used to have cuttings, so you went to the library to go through people's history so you knew what you were talking about when you interviewed them or whatever. So I can't remember.
What you mean what... actual research that you used to do?
Well, yeah.
Well, people don't do that now.
Yeah.
They literally do fuck all.
Well, you go to the library, right, and quite often, so I don't know, for example, I was looking for... cuts on, I don't know, fucking Prince Charles or something. It's quite often they said, no, they're out, someone else has taken them out. So they're out to Anne Robinson. And so I had to go and find her. And I said, can I have the cuts of King Charles or Prince Charles? I got something like, not until I've finished. So I was like a young reporter getting like really put in my place by the Queen of the Mirror. And then I was on, I did celebrity, Fleet Street Columnist. The Weakest Link.
Yes.
And they always like to, so they do this thing where she goes around all the contestants and comes up with something to embarrass them.
Right.
So it was my turn. She's Kevin Sullivan. I suggest Sam. I said, welcome to the show. I said, yeah, thank you. She said, no, you write a, shall we say, an acerbic TV column for the Sunday Mirror, don't you? Who did you write this about? And it said something like, you know, some red-headed dwarf bitch fucker, useless crap. I said, oh, I don't know. She's, it was me.
But the great thing about women like her, though, is that she gave a fuck.
She had a good sense.
She was like, because she was just like, do you know what?
I like her.
I'm making a load of fucking money. You can write whatever you like about me. And that's what it used to
totally
be like.
Totally right. I like old Anne.
Yeah, I think she was good stuff. Let's talk about somebody who doesn't have a fucking sense of humour. How about Jurgen Klopp? Have you seen that fucking clip where old Klopp goes fucking insanely mad because one of the Sky pundits, I think it was, took the piss out of the early kickoff thing and said, oh, I see you've got one of those...
He doesn't like this time of year
because
Liverpool always have this kind of really packed fixture list.
Yeah, well, so does everybody else.
But he always, every year, middle of December, says something about, we've got to do something about the festive fixture list.
Yeah.
Because the big clubs in particular, we're snowed under, I haven't got the la la la. So the commentator goes, or the interviewer guy on Sky, wasn't it? Said, well, here we are then, Jürgen, at your favourite time of year,
yes,
with a busy fixture list ahead. Rather than saying, oh, God, tell me about it. Go, oh, God, you're going to make jokes about it. You know, then he stormed off.
Then he stormed off.
Fucking twat.
I mean, I've always
himself so seriously.
I've always thought Klopp was a bit of a sort of narcissist. You know, it's all very well when things are going well, but things haven't been going that well. And now suddenly he's Mr. Grumpy, and he gets more and more grumpy with every fucking week that passes, which is quite funny. But the football's been good this week, because I see your lot won 5-0. Were you there?
Oh man, yeah, I was.
That was the last time you saw Fulham beat anybody 5-0.
Well, I was trying to go through my mind. I've seen a few great days there. One was a few years back, we beat Luton 7-1 at the end of a season in the Championship when we were getting promoted, so that was a great night. But against Notts Forest, you know, traipsing down the towpath of the Thames on a Wednesday night, freezing fucking cold.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I put on Twitter, you know why I'm doing this? It's my duty. You know, you feel like that about your club. I was really fucking, I go, what am I doing? I got to get there. And the reason you go to 500 games in a row and they're all shit is that once in a blue moon you get a game like we had against Notts Forest. We were fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But we'd have beaten Real Madrid.
Yeah.
We were fucking amazing.
Well, what about Aston Villa beating Manchester City?
I know. Well, at my City,
that's another one, isn't
City are in trouble. They need to get De Bruyne back and they need to get him back fast.
Yeah. He's injured though, isn't he?
That's half their problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Won't be back till the new year and it's really hurting them. Did you see Erling Haaland's face?
I did.
When he was shouting.
I saw that famous picture.
Fucking sea monster.
He does look quite scary, doesn't he? Yeah. I mean, I missed the old context of the argument. All I saw was this picture, which was everywhere, of him just fucking doing his nut.
I'll tell you what it was he doesn't get enough credit. He's a good distributor of the ball as well as being an amazing goal scorer. He got the ball out on about the halfway line, did a swivel and just put through a slide rule pass, as they say, straight in front of Jack Grealish. There's only 2 minutes to go. Jack Grealish had a complete run at goal, a direct line at goal, and the referee called him back for a foul that he should have played advantage for. So Haaland was furious. The advantage wasn't played on his brilliant pass.
Yeah.
But his face when he was having a go at the fucking referee, you think the referee had just killed his mum or something.
Jesus, blimey.
Fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, but I mean, does that mean that their money has finally proven to be not enough? Because there are still things that they haven't done, right?
What do you mean?
Manchester City, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, there's another. I mean, the big problem with Manchester City is, you know, like Everton had 10 points taken off them for financial impropriety.
Yeah.
Well, allegedly, there are charges in the works against Man City that make Everton look like a walk in the fucking park.
Really? And that's just
so
in this country.
They are looking at...
So it's not about, the international rules. It's about the Premier League rules.
Yeah, yeah. And also, yeah, it's all financial impropriety.
Fucking
hell. But anyway, what else is going on?
Well, what else should we talk about? The BBC, I suppose.
Oh, fucking hell, good one, yeah.
And the BBC, unfortunately, have got a another PR problem because one of their presenters gave the finger to, obviously, their crew in the gallery, not realise that they were fucking on the air. I mean, we've all done daft stuff that we've somehow got away with, but I've never actually done that.
Well, look, I mean, sometimes, just before you go on air, you know, you make a joke.
You're literally trying to fix face something. You go, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, you pull a face for a laugh or something. And this woman, Miriam something or Mariam something or other was her name. So she's gave the camera the finger.
She's apologised.
Clearly the director shouted in her ear, "You're on air!"
Right.
She fucked the finger goes down and she looked traumatised.
Yeah, no, she's given an explanation that she was having a laugh with the people counting her down, right? And because they were counting her down, she got to one and she just went like that. But I mean, it's a bit dangerous. It's a bit close to the zero.
I would do one, yeah, you know? Yeah. So yeah, she got caught out. But the main BBC story is, of course, that the fucking licence fee is going up from 159 quid to £169.50.
Right.
The original proposal was that it would go up to £173.30. Where do they get these numbers from?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's what they've settled on. That's what the Tories have allowed the BBC to put the licence fee up by about 10 quid to £169.50. And frankly, what for?
Yes.
What for?
I mean, the good news, though, for you, and I was going to tell you about this earlier in the week, apparently there's a chance that our good mate Attenborough's programmes will get axed. Because apparently they're too expensive.
Fucking boring,
they cost about though, 7 or 8 million a time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the blue planet, yeah, fucking green planet, yeah, planet Earth, you know, the, yeah, fucking black planet, yeah, where the fuck it is, the white planet. Yeah. I mean, you know,
Here's some snakes.
He's
on the
97
beach.
Years old, right? He shouldn't be fucking working.
Yeah.
Should he?
Yeah, well, I mean, hats off to him. And, you know, people love his programmes, you know, so all power to his elbow. They never really appeal to me that much. Just a bunch of fucking animals all over the planet.
I mean, people go, oh, but it's such great photography. Well, get somebody else to fucking narrate it then. He doesn't have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as I've said before.
So they're going to axe them.
Well, there's a chance, because they've got to save all this money, that the place to save the money is the cost of very expensive programmes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's any reason why Netflix or somebody couldn't make those fucking programmes. It's absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, but 10 quid, that's a lot of money for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll tell you what we're going to finish off up on, and it's Jerry Barton. Have you seen Jerry
Barton? Oh, yeah, he's sick of listening to women talk about men's football.
He's physically a completely different planet. He says, to be fair, he said, look, I like women's football. It's really entertaining and it's good to watch. Technically and tactically, it's not that much different. But he says, physically, it's a completely different
planet. Different game.
And until you can experience that, you cannot say what you would have done in said position at said time. He's getting the predictable fucking pelters from all the women's football lovers who are saying he's a misogynist and he's a right winger and he's a bastard and all of that. All of those things may be true, but you know, you can't say it, can you? You just can't say, actually, I don't really. I mean, he's even said he likes watching it, but it's not the fucking same.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he's just being careful there. The truth is, you know, as you know, I'm a big football fan. I love blokes football.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got nothing against women's football. Do I like watching
it? No, but again...
Not really.
But again, it's not even really so much women's football that's the problem. It's the people who make out that they love it and that you have to love it as well.
Yeah, I remember
when Graham Souness described a game, I think it was a Liverpool game, as a real men's game, because it was a real hard fucking, you know, nasty, vitriolic, fucking hard-tackling game. Very entertaining to watch. He nearly fucking lost his job at Sky as a result of saying it was a men's game.
Yeah, I mean, and actually, there's no greater praise because the problem with the women's game is it's nothing like the men's game. I mean, sure, you've got passing, you've got tactics, you've got shooting, etc.
Not much fighting.
But it's a bit like, sort of like, you know...
It's a bit polite.
It's a bit like watching Usain Bolt do the 100 metres in 9 seconds. And then you go, it's the women now, they're going to do it a lot slower. You know, seriously, like men's tennis. You know, you've just seen a 5-setter, fucking powerhouse tennis. Oh, it's a couple of women now. They're going to be doing it for 3 sets, and it'll be much slower and much weaker.
Yes.
You know, it's nothing against women's sport, but it's
just no point in making out.
It's not as good as men's sport, is it?
Yeah. Not in physical, you know, strength. And
I don't find, put it this way. I don't find women's football nearly as entertaining as men's.
Well, Jerry Barton does, and he's still in trouble. But there we are. Anyway, that's the end of that. We'll be back next week with more from the Tales of the Dark Side.
Yep.
In the meantime, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, fuck off. We'll be right back.
Thank you.